Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Chess Records was an independent record label created on the south side of Chicago in 1950 by two Polish immigrants named Leonard and Phil Chess. As one of the most important blues labels of all time, Chess Records captured the electric sound of the American South and had a huge influence on the early days of rock and roll. Chess Records helped introduce America to Muddy Waters, Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, Howlin' Wolf, and Etta James. And when these albums made their way across the Atlantic, they inspired the British blues movement that gave us Clapton, Zeppelin, and of course, the Rolling Stones. In this episode of Prisoners of Rock and Roll, we're taking a look at the history of Chess Records, how it got started, their impressive roster of important musicians, and the influence that these songs had on rock and roll. We'll also look at the shadier side of the label, where artists didn't really get paid royalties that they deserved, and DJs were given writing credits in exchange for playing records. There's a lot here, so let's hit it.
Be a son of a gun. Gonna make pretty women jump and shout. Then the world wanna know what this all about. But you know I'm here. Everybody knows I'm here. Well, you know I'm the hoochie coochie man. Everybody knows up here.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 80. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm happy to introduce you to my co-host. You know him, you love him, the Hoochie Coochie Man himself, Mr. Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking, baby?
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks, as well as McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia, and our show is proudly part of the family over at the Pantheon Podcast Network, which is the network for music podcasts. What's going on, brother?
Hey, man, I'm having a little technical difficulties, so I'm using a microphone in my new Beats headphones, so there's no microphone in front of me, so that's why maybe it sounds a little weird for me today. I don't know.
All good, man. We'll see what we can do in post-production, and otherwise, the music doesn't stop, so we got to keep on going.
How was spring training, man?
Dude, spring training was awesome, so we took an extra week off because I was in Clearwater, Florida for a couple days. I went to four Phillies games in 4 days, spent a lot of time outside, came home sunburned. It was awesome. It was nice to get out of town and watch some baseball.
You caught some good games from what I saw, but then you caught a couple bad games.
When they start bringing in the guys that don't even have their names on the back of the jerseys and their numbers are like, you know, in the high 80s and aren't going to be in the team in 2 weeks, but whatever, man, it was cool.
But that's us. That's us. We're the guys that don't have the name on the jersey, cuz.
Right. That's us. True.
We're the underdog.
That's true.
I'll be with you next year.
Yeah, dude, the warden wants to go. We'll have a couple people coming down.
I am so glad you had a good time, my brother. You deserve it.
Thank you. So tonight we're going to be talking about Chess Records. And I love these episodes where we tell a story and kind of how it's all connected to the, you know, the big story of rock and roll. I really enjoyed doing the research for this one.
I like how you call these episodes geeks episodes because, you know, we geek out on this kind of shit. You know, this is what the show was made for stuff like this, where we can geek out.
Absolutely. Sometimes we like, you know, just kind of spinning tunes and talking about stuff that we like, but we also sometimes love shifting gears and you said doing these kind of nerd episodes where we're really diving into stuff. And man, this is such an important record label in the history. I mean, this has been on our topic list for like 3 years too, like doing this.
It's a great history of it. I mean, they did make a movie about the Chess records. But it was very, how can you say, Bruce, felt far-fetched or?
Yeah, it took some liberties with the truth.
Especially Beyonce looking like Etta James. No.
Yeah.
that didn't work out for me.
The movie is called Cadillac Records. It's, if you want to kind of learn the quick and dirty and like the high points, it's a good movie. It's just when you start looking into it, you're like, oh, that didn't happen. Oh, that didn't happen. And there's some pretty big plot points that never happened that they bring up.
It's a movie, you know. Yeah. It you know, maybe showed a little bit of Muddy Waters, bring him to the silver screen, and guys like Little Walter. Nobody even heard of Little Walter until that movie came out.
Yeah, totally agree. And Beyonce said, is Beyonce playing Etta James? And it's pretty funny. I was reading, they said that like Beyonce was invited to sing At Last by Etta James at Obama's inauguration. And Etta James was like, hey, dude, like, you know, I'm still alive. Like, and I sang that song originally.
Yes. She was like, tell that bitch to stop singing my song.
We'll get to her. But yeah, dude. So I've got this whole outline put together and I went down the rabbit hole doing all kinds of research, as I love to do with all these stories. And let me start all the way back at the beginning and the Chess Brothers. So the Chess Brothers, I mentioned in the monologue that they were brothers from Poland and they immigrated to Chicago when they were 11 and 7 years old. And their real names were Lazor and Fazel Chez. And like most immigrants at that time, when they came to America, they Americanized their name and they become Leonard and Philip Chess. So when they got a little older, they owned a couple of liquor stores and then they eventually bought a bar called the Macumba Lounge on the south side of Chicago.
You gotta name the bar after an Irish name, bro.
That's true. The place was in like a rough neighborhood and had some questionable clientele, not like our home base at McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia.
Not at all. Not at all. Not at all.
But the south side of Chicago also had this exploding black population as people migrated out of the Mississippi Delta because of like all the Jim Crow shit that was going on. So between 1940 and 1950, the number of African Americans living in Chicago grew by 77%. So people were just moving out of the deep south, and a lot of them were coming to Chicago because that's where like the trains were going. So this lounge became this big spot for jazz musicians and blues musicians, and the Chess Brothers started hearing this music and they saw the crowds like going crazy for it. So they're like, we want to record these guys. And Leonard Chess goes and he gets a job at a record label called Aristocrat Records. And he works his way up. Aristocrat was normally like a jazz label, but by 1949, these two guys, they own the company, Phil and Leonard, and they changed the name to Chess Records in 1950. But right before they bought Chess Records, the Macumba Lounge mysteriously burned down and the brothers got all the insurance money. And then they used that money to buy out the owners of Aristocrat and called it Chess Records. Now, I listened to an interview with Marshall Chess, one of the sons, and he was like, oh, they absolutely torched that place on purpose to get the, get the money. Yeah.
You know, they're different times.
Sure. Backing up a couple of years, the most important artist on Aristocrat Records at the time was a gentleman named McKinley Morganfield, who went professionally by the name Muddy Waters. And I guess we should start about Muddy Waters.
Yeah, where do we start, bro?
One of the most important figures in like the early stages of rock and roll, but he's not a rock and roller.
No, but you know, I take for granted, like I think Muddy Waters is a household name. Like I said it to two different older gentlemen today and they had no idea who he was.
I wonder if the warden knows who he is.
The warden knows all.
The warden did.
He's like the great and powerful Oz.
It's like that time the warden showed up at McCusker's and he was wearing an Iron Maiden shirt, and we told him drinks were free if he could name two Iron Maiden songs, and he couldn't do it.
But he had a great excuse. He bought it at Kmart.
Right. But so going back to Muddy Waters, you know, Muddy Waters grew up in the Deep South, and he was initially recorded by this guy, Alan Lomax, who we talked about in the blues episode, that he was a dude who drove around the Deep South with like a recording equipment in the trunk of his car looking for dudes to record. And he was going to like prisons and plantations. He was trying to like capture all this this blues music, and he recorded Muddy Waters. And then Muddy moved to Chicago in the 40s. And I guess when he gets to Chicago, he tries playing in places like the Macomba Lounge and out on the streets. And his acoustic guitar that he was playing in the South, nobody could freaking hear it the way people were going crazy. So he went electric, which to me is like, that's as important as Dylan going electric, like Muddy Waters going electric.
Sure. I was wondering while you were saying that, that makes so much sense. Like him going electric because nobody could hear him.
Yeah. So people were like, dude, you're an awesome guitar player, but we can't hear you. So he went electric. And initially it was just him. And then eventually he just started playing with a band around him. Initially, like in 48, Aristocrat released a song called I Can't Be Satisfied by Muddy. And it was actually like an electric version of one of the songs that Alan Lomax recorded, which is, you know, like, okay, cool. It's kind of interesting. I can, you know, let me play a little bit of it so you just kind of get the idea. This was like before he really broke, but this song was his first hit, and it sold like 3,000 record copies in a day. Here you go.
Wow.
Well, I'm gonna wait till I won't be back no more. Going back down south, child, don't you want to go? Well, when I'm trouble, I be all good
now. It's cool.
Oh, yeah. I love Muddy.
It doesn't have that huge guitar sound that Muddy, you know, some of his other stuff has. Yeah, rock and roll's not even a thing yet.
Yeah, oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, so that song sounds like some early blues stuff, like Delta Blues. It's just an electric acoustic guitar or something like that. But some of his later stuff, man, has, it's just this huge sound to it.
I guess it added to his sound, plantation feel, Chicago sound. Yeah, that's all it sounds like in Chicago.
Yeah, that sound we just played sounds more like the plantation stuff, which is like a little louder. But some of the later stuff, they say, I mean, the guy basically invented the Chicago blues sound. And yeah, we already played a little bit of Hoochie Coochie Man, and we just played I Can't Be Satisfied. It's probably worth playing like two other songs from him, because one is a song, Rolling Stone, which is, you know, it's worth playing because the Rolling Stones took their name from it.
I would have all you good looking women fishing after me, showing up after me, showing up after me. Oh, love, oh, love, showing up.
When you write a song that the Rolling Stones name themselves after you, that's culturally important.
Oh, I can hear the influence he had on Keith and Mick. Totally.
Totally agree, man. And his song, Manish Boy, is, I don't know how many times I hear that. Like, I wind up yelling along with the song. I was listening to it today at work, and it's just like, holy shit, man. Like, some of these blues songs, like, you feel them. You don't just hear them. And that is such a kick-ass song.
Imagine being the original idea of it, the movement that blues had, or, you know, we'll get into.
Let's play a little bit of Manish Boy. Believe me, baby, I have lots of fun. I'm a man. I spell him H-I-N. absolutely love it. The power behind that
makes me go, yow.
Seriously, that's I looked up today who that was. It's Johnny Winters doing that yelling. The albino blues player.
Sure.
Yeah.
Johnny Winters' brother.
Yeah, Edgar Winters' brother, Johnny. Yeah, dude, the sound of that. And it's like, it's so cool because, you know, he's like, I'm a man. Like, you know, it's such a racial thing in the South to call a black person boy and stuff like that. And it's just really, it's a great song.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's rock and roll. That's the beginning of rock and roll right there. You know, it's banging, man.
That's like, even if you don't know the blues, like that's the riff in your head that you think of, like when you do anything for the blues, like, I got the blues.
Oh yeah. It's like every blues song there is.
Yeah.
You have a riff like that. I mean, John Lee Hooker made a living out of that riff.
Right. And we'll get to him. But before we do, his band, they unofficially called themselves the Headhunters, because like when they didn't have a gig, they would go into another bar with like all their stuff and be like, hey man, we're just gonna play, we challenge you, we'll play, we'll blow you off the stage.
Oh god, I can't imagine the fucking, I don't know, the competition for gigs, you know.
Yeah, then they called themselves the Headhunters because they killed the other people and took their gigs. And I mean, the guys that he played with, like, let's just start, like, Little Walter, his harmonica player, just friggin' amazing. And you'd think like maybe a harmonica is not like, you know, a really important instrument in terms of like, you know, you got guitar and everything else. But people said he was like what Charlie Parker is to like the saxophone or Hendrix was to a guitar. That's what this dude was with a harmonica.
Sure. He was amazing. He was flat out amazing. A couple years ago, they put him in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Little Walter.
Yeah, dude. Well, because he was part of Muddy's band, but he also had 14 top 10 R&B hits on his own. And he was also Yeah, so he had a lot of shit. And he was also a session guy for Chess. So he was on like a lot of these records. And I was reading that he, you know, I mean, the harmonica is a really important part of the blues. And he was one of the first dudes to like cup his hands over the harmonica to make it louder. And then he, you know, he had an amp so you could hear the harmonica. Really just important, right? Really? Kind of like musicianship.
He saw what Muddy was doing, electric, I can go electric. And look the sound he got off of just the microphone. It gives it another sound.
Sure. We got a song called Juke on here, which was one of the, I think it was a top 10 R&B hit, but it's just an instrumental. But it's him just playing a harmonica. And it is awesome, dude. Check this out.
Cupping of his hand and the microphone gives it a whole sound by itself.
Absolutely. That was the only instrumental that's hit number one on the Billboard R&B chart. It's kind of cool that ever. Yeah. It's cool that he was a sideman, but he could also step out and did all of his own stuff too. But yeah, you got to point out too, like he was a bad drunk. He was like self-destructive dude. And there's a scene in the movie that's total bullshit that he shoots somebody for pretending to be him. They said like that never happened, but he did die. He did die getting after he got into a fight in Chicago.
I mean, he got beat so bad by the police, they fucked up his face.
Yeah.
You know, like, so like at the end of his career, he looked bad. Yeah, he was a pretty boy.
Classic, like, rock and roll lifestyle, amazing musician, totally self-destructed, died early, drank too much, was just a bad load, and that was kind of the end of him. But totally deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, both as a musician and the influence that he had. But
amen.
The other dude I had was, this guy's super interesting, man, Willie Dixon. So Willie Dixon was like the bass player for Muddy's band and another dude who moved from Mississippi to Chicago. But when he wasn't performing, he wrote like this guy did like everything for Chess Records. So he wrote Hoochie Coochie Man and Rolling Stone by Muddy. He wrote Little Red Rooster that Howlin' Wolf recorded in the Stones.
Wow.
He wrote like Diddy Wah Diddy by Bo Diddley. So this guy was working for everything. And he also was like, he was like a talent scout. He was a session guy. He packed the records in like the boxes to mail them out. So, you know, he also
He grunted everything, man.
Yeah, dude. He was like, I'm all in. He was also, he created this thing called the American Folk Blues Festival, which like rounded up a lot of these blues guys and took them overseas to England. And that's where like all these British band, like Clapton and guys like that, saw all these guys and like wanted to make the blues. And when the Brits came back to America with this blues sound, it was like this dude had a huge part of it. Really, really cool.
Wow. That is cool.
And, It's interesting. I'll play something from him in a minute, but he was also like one of those guys that he got sued. Like he sued Zeppelin for ripping him off because some of the stuff, like
it's obvious, like the riffs are obvious.
Yeah, we did that whole episode on that, but he wrote "You Need Love" that Muddy Waters recorded that totally rips off Whole Lot of Love. He really fought for like royalties and everything. And when he died, his widow bought the Chess Records building and turned it into like a blues museum. So
no, is that what's going on there now?
Yeah. It's called like the Blues Haven Foundation. So it's like a museum and like recording studio and like education and shit like that.
Ah,
so,
I got to make that on my pilgrimage.
Yeah. Super cool. Right. And, I put a song on here, dude, called, Walkin' Blues. And It's so interesting because it's got footsteps in it the whole time because it's walking blues. Let me just check this out, dude. I was listening to it today. And I'm like, this is really cool.
Take your time. Don't walk so fast. Stay on the road. I don't blame people saying walking the blues. Walking the blues.
I love that, dude.
Oh my God, dude, you don't need more than that. That's a passion right there. That's everything that music's supposed to be.
I think that's an old song from like the 30s that he was doing a version of, but I was like, oh my God, man. Like whenever he recorded that, to have that sound effect of the guy, the footsteps and just that chill, relax, man, we'll get, I was like, dude, it's awesome. I loved it.
Yeah. I loved it too. That was a great pick.
Yeah. Really cool. And that's the best thing to do in a show when you uncover something, especially that it's like older music and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. I've never heard this before. Love it.
Yeah. You're doing a great job, Bruce. You're doing a great
job.
Thank
you, sir. Thank you. All right. The next dude, man, I try not to spend too much time on him because Howlin' Wolf, man, my one of my favorite blues musicians.
We could do a whole episode just on the Wolf.
Absolutely, man. I don't think I put Howlin' Wolf even on the playlist, which I don't know how I didn't do that. But everything about him, dude, the way he performed on stage, we've talked about him a couple times. He was like enormous. He was like 6'5", 6'4", and he was a big dude, and he spoke the way he sang, that real gravelly voice.
Yeah.
And he would like dance on stage and like get down and like all fours and crawl around, like really like a showman, like, you know, again, before rock and roll. This is decades before like Freddie Mercury and Bowie and all that other stuff.
You know, I think I remember during the blues episode, we talked about how he got his name. Like he was saying, like something to do with a cemetery or something like
that. Something like when he was a little kid, his grandmom gave him that name or something like that. And what I love about it, like with him, I went and looked up his Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, go on their website and they have like the essay that they put in the program. And it said like, Howlin' Wolf showed you that the blues didn't just have to be about like pain and suffering. It could be like about having a rockin' time. And really interesting because he was initially on Sun Records, and Sam Phillips, who created Sun Records, said that he was the greatest discovery he ever made. So like the dude who discovered Elvis said that Howlin' Wolf was the best artist he ever discovered, and
probably the most natural talented guy out there at the time.
Sun Records, back in the day, like when they first started, they didn't actually like make records. They weren't a record label. They just were a recording studio. So Sam Phillips would actually hire another company to like actually press the records and sell them. And that was Chess Records. That's what they did. And eventually Howlin' Wolf wound up moving to Chicago and going over to Chess Records. But man, just amazing. Just my one of my favorite blues musicians.
He's amazing. Why don't they make a movie about him?
I don't know, man, because it's a pretty interesting story. Like he was, he was the band leader. He made the decisions. He managed all of his money. He had his own car, which is sounds silly, but at that time, in the early 50s, a black dude that had that wasn't dirt poor was rather substantial.
Even in the movie, the actor that played him was awesome. He's I own the truck. The truck don't own me.
Yeah.
That just says it all about the Wolf.
Sure. Living on his own terms, even as a black dude in the South in the 50s, was just really cool.
Who's going to tell him? Who's going to tell him he's wrong?
Let's play a little bit. I put Little Red Rooster on here because the Stones, of course, covered it and had a hit with it. And the Stones actually, when they recorded it at Chess Records. But that the Wolf version is awesome. Here you go. Love that voice, man.
Can you imagine being in a room with him while he's singing that? Not only was he had a great singing voice, but just his body, his voice was big, like a monster. He probably opened his mouth and just this huge sound came out of it. I bet that recording itself had one live microphone and he was in the recording studio with wood floors and just that.
There's a lot of YouTube videos of him performing and stuff like that. It's totally worth checking out if you're into all this kind of stuff. Really, really interesting stuff. And yeah, we've even shared some YouTube videos back and forth of him on stage, dancing around and stuff like that. Just really cool.
Even with the Rolling Stones, bring him on TV like they did.
Sure. The
only national American time that he was on television, the Wolf was on television, was opening for the Rolling Stones for a television show.
And, the Stones played such a huge role in bringing these guys back to the forefront. By the time the Stones are into them, the blues is kind of, rock and roll is taken over, and the blues isn't really that popular anymore. And the Stones were oh my God, this is Muddy Waters. That TV show, they brought the Wolf on, the host is yammering on, and one of the guys in the Stones is will you shut up and let Howlin' Wolf sing? Yeah. Brian Jones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool, man. We could do a whole episode on the Wolf, but
make a movie about it. Someone make a movie about the Wolf.
The next dude I had on the list was Sonny Boy Williamson too, which you like him a lot, don't you?
I do. Me and my friend Donnie, we were both blues fanatics and jazz fanatics. So, he's in our playlist together all the time.
Awesome. Didn't do a ton of stuff for Chess Records. He only recorded about 70 songs for Chess Records, but why he's important is he was one of the dudes that he went overseas to the UK, and he was recording with the Yardbirds and the Animals and helped bring that American blues sound over to England, which again was the British a big part of the British invasion was all these blues rock and roll bands coming this way. And we called him Sonny Boy Williamson too, because the first Sonny Boy Williamson was a musician who died in 48. And this dude, his real name was Alec Miller. He just started calling himself Sonny Boy Williams. Some people say it was a just coincidence. other people said he was just trying to piggyback off of the other guy's fame. And then I think you said before there was a Sonny Boy Williamson 3 who threatened to Sonny Boy Williamson 2 was going to kill him for using his name or something like that.
Oh, dude, they're all gangsters, man. I'm sure the third, he's a rapper or something.
You had the story. I mean, when we did the blues episode, it was 2 summers ago, but because there's a scene in Cadillac Records where they're driving Muddy and Little Walter driving down the road, and there's like a car broken down, and it just says like Little Walter and his band on the side of it. And Little Walter gets out and was like, "What the heck? You steal my," and he just shoots the guy in the face. But yeah. So that didn't happen. But the point being, the musicians would just be like, "Oh yeah, that's me," and they would go out to try to make their own music. Like we were saying in the doo-wop episode, how there was like 30 bands calling themselves the Drifters at one point. But Bring It On Home by Sonny Boy Williamson 2. This is a great tune.
Gonna bring it on home to you. I done bought my ticket. I got my load. Conductor done hollered all aboard.
Really interesting the way he's singing. Like he's got his voice going up and down as he's like warbling.
Yeah, he's definitely an original kind of sounding guy. I was in Washington last year and they have Sonny Boy's guitar on display in the American History Museum.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. I remember being geeked out about it because me and my boy Donnie always talk about him. I was like, holy shit, that's amazing.
Yeah, very cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Another dude that was on Chess Records for a little while was John Lee Hooker. And John Lee Hooker, yeah. So John Lee Hooker released over 100 albums. And
and they're all about a woman leaving them.
right. So Which is interesting because if you look up his Chess record stuff, if you look up a picture of the record, it says John Lee Booker instead of John Lee Hooker, because these guys didn't make royalties. So he would just change his name and he would record the exact same stuff for another label and sell it so he could get more money off of it.
That's brilliant. He's a street guy, man. He was a hustler.
He was. And some of the stuff he recorded while on Chess was One Bourbon, One Scotch, and One Beer, which Thurgood covered, which I absolutely love. But he wrote a song that I put on here called Mustang Sally in GTO. And let me play a little of it, dude. I was like, damn it. I wish I would have discovered this and we would have put it on the Hot Rod episode because it's friggin' awesome. I'll skip ahead a little bit in it. Out of sight.
Mustang Sally is coming. You better pull to the side, 'cause she's rocking, she's rolling, she's rocking. Oh, yeah.
Love it, man.
I know how we talk about go out and get yourself a new set of headphones. Let me tell you, these Dre Beat ones I have are fucking unbelievable because the sound of what I'm hearing that you probably wouldn't hear anywhere else. It's fucking amazing. John Lee Hooker was such a talented fucking guy. You can hear him tapping his foot on the fucking ground.
Yeah. And for a dude that, like you told the story before, like he was illiterate, right? And you said his band would be like, "What key are we playing in tonight, Mr.
John
Hooker?"
Lee Hooker, the John Lee Hooker key.
And he'd say, "This one, boing."
yeah.
And I mean, that song
Keith Richards actually said that.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
I credit it to you.
I'm not that talented.
That sounds so much like so many John Lee Hooker songs. They call it, you know, like boogie blues, but it's so good. I think he was probably the first blues guy the first blues album I ever bought, because he was making music until his 80s.
Oh, dude, I remember him as a little kid because he was in the Blues Brothers
movies. Blues Brothers movies, yeah.
Like, I knew who John Lee Hooker was as a little kid.
He did some stuff with Santana. He did an album with where he sang for Canned Heat, which was really good. Just, yeah, really, really talented. Just one of those dudes, though, with 100 albums. Like, where do you start? You can just listen to, Best Of or something like that. But, all right. Buddy Guy was on Chess for a little while. He only did one album with Chess Records, and it's not as good as some of his other stuff, but he started it as a session guy who played with Muddy Waters, and he played with Howlin' Wolf and Sonny Boy Williamson and Little Walter. But Leonard Chess didn't like him. They said that the way he played guitar sounded like a bunch of noise and wouldn't let him make records that sounded like his live performances. They wanted to record stuff that was like popular that would sell. So he only did like one album with Chess, and it didn't do anything. And he kind of moved on to, he's still alive and he's still making music.
The thing with Buddy Guy was Jimi Hendrix before Jimi Hendrix, you know. Buddy, yeah. I've seen Buddy in concert a few times, and he's so talented. He will like imitate other guitar players on stage. He's like, you want to hear a little of this? He starts playing like BB King. You want to hear a little bit of, you know what I'm saying?
But yeah, like, yeah, sure.
He was so talented. Buddy Guy is, he had that polka dot thing going for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen him a bunch of times. He goes out in the middle of the crowd. He lets people like pluck his strings while he's like playing the chords.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
But just didn't fit with Chess Records for some reason. Said Leonard Chess didn't like the way he played guitar. And by this point of his career, he was still working. Like, he drove a tow truck at night and then like recorded at Sun Records during the day. It was crazy. But
I respect that, man.
Yeah, right. A lot. I mean, it was shit. And a lot of these guys were like, they had other jobs and they had to hustle, and because there just wasn't a lot of money. And part of that is because of the way Chess Records paid them. And I've got some stuff on that at the end of the show, but we play a little Buddy Guy there. It was hard to find some of the stuff that he did on Chess, but he did a song, I Suffer With the Blues. Man,
you hear his guitar? You listen to his guitar in the background? He's like Jimi Hendrix before Hendrix, man.
It's like he's doing it's not a duet, but yeah, like they're like he's going back and forth, but instead of another singer, it's his guitar. The guitar is talking back to him.
Yeah.
And it was interesting too, if you listen to that song and you just kind of this is with anything you're listening to, like focus on the drums for a couple seconds or focus on the bass. Like the way the bass was walking up and down in that song, it's just it was really cool.
Oh, blues is nothing without the backbeat, bro.
Sure, absolutely. One dude I want to touch on real quickly and we can move on was a guy named Hubert Sumlin. So Hubert Sumlin was Howlin' Wolf's lead guitar player, and he eventually went and played with Muddy Waters as well. That's in the it's in the Cadillac Records where they're trying to they're saying like you should go play with Muddy instead of or Muddy Waters, like you should play with me, and Howlin' Wolf's like, I'm the band leader, you talk to me, you don't talk to him.
Yeah.
But
like there, go ahead, Bo. Go ahead.
No, I was like, but just reading interesting about him, like two things that were interesting was one, he learned how to play guitar by nailing a piece of baling wire to the side of his house and using a Coke bottle as a slide.
Brilliant.
And the second one is that the Stones had been fighting to get this dude in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for years. Like Keith Richards is always saying, this dude needs to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for what he did as a guitar player.
Yeah. I don't doubt it, man. I really don't know who he is, but
yeah,
what Keith says, I believe it.
Sure. Here's a little bit of Sometimes I'm Right by Hubert Sumlin.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a great recording that is.
I just was looking at like Wikipedia while that was playing, and I'm looking at like some of his stuff that he did. He did an album in like 2004 where he had all these guests. Musicians like Keith Richards, Clapton, Levon Helm, David Johansen from the New York Dolls, like all these dudes that just like really, really like him. He's buried in New Jersey. Look at that.
Jersey boy.
Yeah. He died in 2011 and he was 80. He's buried in Wayne, New Jersey, which is north. And then Mick and Keith paid for his funeral. So,
no way.
It's kind of cool.
Those Rolling Stone boys, man.
Yep. Those fine young men. So,
yes.
The last blues musician I had on the blues part of this, of the Bluesmen, and it's somebody who's not on the record label, and that was B.B. King. So I just thought it was interesting that B.B. King was thinking about joining, and Willie Dixon told him not to, said, you'll make more money playing on your own. Don't get hooked up with
this. Well, he probably knew the Chess Brothers were like, you know, skimming. He's like, Don't get involved with them. They're going to rip you off, you know?
So because those guys, the Chess Brothers, like people weren't playing music by black musicians at the time. Like, you know, we talked about this before, like in the 50s, like a black group would have something, record something, and a record label would come in and have like Pat Boone record their own version and play it. So the Chess Brothers would actually just flat out pay the DJs to play their music, which is payola, but they would do it to get these guys on the radio.
I mean, payola is what made rock and roll start.
Like they it were did.
Knocking, you know, like they were not going to play that shit on the radio unless you paid them.
It did. You know? And it's funny because at some point there were like rules, like our radio station would say, well, we can't play this, sir. We can only play so many records by one record label at a time. So Chess Records went and started Checker Records, and Checker Records would publish some of the same shit. And it would be like, oh, well, you know, you're going to play all of our Chess Records stuff. Well, this isn't Chess Records. This is Checker Records.
Yo, man, it was all street. It was all on the street. Absolutely.
All right. And then let's move on and talk about some rock and rollers, because Chess Records also released albums by some of the most important early rock and roll, including who I think is the original motherfucker of rock and roll, Mr. Chuck Berry.
Oh yeah, brother. Oh yeah.
I mean, Chuck Berry was in Chicago and he met Muddy Waters, and Muddy Waters was like, yo man, you got to go see Leonard Chess. And when Chuck Berry's in there and he's recording a song he wrote called Ida Red, and the Chess Brothers suggested that they change the name to something else, and they change it to Maybelline. And Chuck Berry is on that like Mount Rushmore of most important dudes in rock and roll.
Absolutely. You know, John Lennon said if rock and roll had another name, it'd be Chuck Berry's.
Absolutely, dude. I've been listening to a lot of Chuck Berry the last couple months. I've been listening to like an audiobook, like a biography about him. We'll do a show on him at some point because he has such an interesting story. And I said, man, he is just one of the original motherfuckers of rock and roll. Let me play a little bit of Maybelline and I'll pull up my notes on how he was getting ripped off by the Chess Brothers with here. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing out to run my V8-4. A Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do. A Cadillac pulled up to 104, but Ford got hot and wouldn't do no more.
God, can you imagine being the Chess Brothers sitting in a room saying, our kid, show us what you got. And he busts that kind of shit out. Yeah, they had to jump up in the air. It's like, that's it. That's right. Exactly what we're looking for.
This dude, he's so important to music because he, like, music and rock and roll tore down racial barriers. When he would perform, they would have like segregated audiences where they would put like a rope down the middle, like the white people would be on this side and the black people would be on the other. And they would just tear down the friggin' rope because they just want to party and have a good time because his music did that.
Dude, it wasn't even that long ago that shit was going on, if you really think about it.
It really wasn't. It really wasn't. And any friggin' rock and roll. I mean, you know, he's with like Buddy Holly, with just these guys that just, you can tie with any musician back to Chuck Berry, and just, I can't overstate how important that dude is to rock and roll. And you know, and people make an argument that like the man tried to bring him down, like the charges, you know, he went to prison for a while for taking a woman across state lines, and people were always just effing with him. And you know, because he was a famous black dude in the late 50s,
and he was changing shit, you know. He was changing everything.
Right.
He was breaking the rules. You know? Yeah.
Right. Breaking the rules of what music did. I mean, he was, you know, Elvis was shaking his hips, but Chuck Berry was doing the duck walk, you know, dancing around. As I said, and it's in that movie that, you know, like a white woman runs up on stage and then like gives him a hug and has him, the cops come, like, that's enough. Yeah. And they break it all up. But this is one of the cool things, too, about doing this show. We've had so many instances that we've talked about where rock and rollers or musicians are tearing down these barriers, right? Whether it's like Sinatra with Frankie, Sammy Davis Jr. or Chuck Berry. Just super cool, man.
Bro, only music can do that. Only music can break down barriers like that. Words can't. Politicians can't. Music can't.
Bringing people together, and it's at some point he like Chuck Berry was looking at like his royalties or like the pressing for Maybelline, and it said like the writing credits on the album had like him, it had the dude who was the landlord for the Chess Records building, and it had Alan Freed, the radio DJ, because the Chess Records guys would just be like, oh, we'll give the landlord writing credits because that's how we'll pay the rent, and we'll give Alan Freed writing credit so he can get, you know, so he'll play the record on the record label, because then Alan Freed was getting paid. He's getting royalties for playing the shit that he allegedly wrote.
That's one way to do it.
Right, and it's this guy's ripping him off. Ripping off Chuck Berry.
That's the story how it goes, man.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of those guys that he just got shafted by, you know, for forever. And you can totally, I mean, you can go listen to interviews with him and he'll tell you all about it too.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you really want to get down with Chuck Berry, go stream on Apple or whatever streaming thing you got and get Hail Hail Rock and Roll. Great documentary. In that documentary, you see him and Keith Richards almost getting a fist fight. It's amazing. It's amazing.
The other dude, the other big rock and roller that came out of Chess Records, man, another original motherfucker who I don't think gets enough credit by casual music fans, is Bo Diddley.
Oh, and God, yeah.
Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry did as much for rock and roll as Elvis did. I mean, so Bo Diddley was originally Elias McDaniels, and he was auditioning for Chess Records with a song called Uncle John, and Chess, they didn't like it. They didn't like the title, so he changed the song to his nickname, Bo Diddley. And, you know, he was so interesting, man, because he was like, he had such a punk rock, Rollins attitude that he was like, when I go out on that stage, I want to destroy the audience with my guitar playing.
Oh yeah. He was like, take no prisoners kind of attitude.
Yeah. And he was like the dude who was playing with his, you know, playing the guitar with his teeth and putting it behind his head, like way before Hendrix was doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was building his own, you know, his own guitars and taught himself how to make the guitar, and just really, really interesting, man. And just a, he was always pissed because he thought the music industry was paying too much attention to Elvis when like he was doing all this amazing stuff. Like, I mean, there's a thing called the Bo Diddley beat where.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The 1-2-3-1-2. Like,
that's right. The Bo Diddley.
Yeah, that's like Desire from U2 and Magic Bus by The Who. Let's just play a little bit of the original, man. The original Bo Diddley by Bo Diddley.
Bo Diddley called her Nanny Go to make a pretty baby of Sunday Go. Bo Diddley called a bellcat to make a pretty baby on Sunday hat.
Oh, man. He was like the metal version of what rock and roll was. He was like that aggression, man. He had something that Chuck Berry didn't have, and it was aggression. It was balls. It was pissed off.
There's that fuzz on that guitar, like a distortion, too. And this is like the 50s that he's doing this. It's so far ahead of its time, man. Like, he was like one of the first dudes that was putting like reverb and the tremolo on the guitar, which is like, I mean, it's everywhere now. But to think that that was like, he was one of the first dudes who did that. I mean, he's like, shit, like Buddy Holly was covering that song.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so, this is how far back this dude got, like the very, very beginning of rock and roll. I went back, I had like one afternoon at work. I just put on Bo Diddley on Spotify, I just went down the rabbit hole, and it was like a bunch of stuff I didn't know, and it was all awesome. It was really good.
He's amazing.
Really, I remember, is, dude.
You know what the first memory I have of Bo Diddley is? When Bo Jackson did all those Nike commercials.
Yeah, the Bo Knows.
Bo Knows this, Bo Knows that. And at the end of the commercial, he was there. It's like, Bo, you don't know Diddley.
Awesome. Maybe it's a good place to take a break, dude.
Yeah, let's smoke them if you got them.
Yeah, sounds good, man. All right, we'll be back.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox at McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're talking a lot about the blues today, but you can avoid feeling like you got the blues by wearing a great pair of socks by Boldfoot Socks. We're proud to call them friends of the show, and I'm excited to tell you about them. Boldfoot Socks is an American-owned business that makes every single pair of socks right here in the USA with materials that are grown here. They have socks for every occasion and dozens of styles for any taste. They also help pay it forward by donating a portion of the proceeds to veteran-owned charities. So as soon as you're done listening to us, head on over to boldfoot.com and check out all the different styles that they have. That's boldfoot.com. We'll be right back. That was a song by some lads from England called the Rolling Stones. And the song was called 2120 South Michigan Avenue. And if you put that address in your GPS or Google Maps, it's the Chess Records building. It's the address for Chess Records because the Rolling Stones were big fans of all this music. And in 64 and 65, they went to Chess Records and they recorded some music, including this. And they recorded It's All Over Now, which was a hit for them. And they did they did a really early version of Satisfaction they recorded there. So it's an important part of the Rolling Stones story.
Oh, the Stones going to Chess Records is legendary. I mean, I think the most legendary part is when they meet Muddy Waters for the first time. With the story goes that the Stones are walking through the hallways and someone's painting the wall. And they look over, and it's Muddy Waters painting the wall, like doing like janitor work kind of thing. And they're like, Mr. Waters, you know, whatever, what are you doing? He's like, you got to pay the bill somehow. At that time, he wasn't making a lot of money, you know, because his albums weren't really making blues, wasn't really happening, selling records kind of deal. So he was trying to make himself useful by painting the walls or cleaning up around the studio and everything like that. So that's what he was doing when the Stones showed up and said, we named your band after us.
There's always been debate whether that was actually true or not, but Keith Richards said it happened. Marshall Chess says it's bullshit, but Keith says it happened. So who knows, man? Nonetheless, it's an amazing story.
Yeah. I mean, it's so humble. But you know what? Him saying that he didn't do that, that just shows how much he didn't pay him to fucking, you know, whatever.
Absolutely, because there's also a part in the story that I didn't talk about. We're talking about Willie Dixon suing all these guys and fighting for royalties. Like he wound up suing the publishing arm of like Chess Records to get Muddy in his estate, like the royalties that he deserved, because these guys, like, there was no, like, the accounting of this shit was like, you know, Muddy would start complaining that he thought he needed some more money. Like, he wasn't getting paid enough. The Chess brothers would just look at the books and be like, all right, we'll just take $5,000 from this dude's royalties and just give it to him. Yeah. Without telling the other guy that they were taking royalties from him. And part of it is like, okay, man, it's that early stage where, like, we talked about this with like Sub Pop, like their contract was like one page and they didn't have any bookkeeping and stuff. But you also, it's like, it's two white dudes doing the business side of all these black musicians. And there's a lot of shit that comes with that too.
I mean, they're kind of revolutionizing something, so they're making it up as they go along.
Yeah. It's also one of the complicated part of this whole story too, man, is like that it took a lot of white dudes from like England to bring this stuff back, right? Like the Stones and the Who and Zeppelin and, you know, some guys, I mean, the Stones are always, like you said, they take Howlin' Wolf on tour, they bring Muddy on stage. But then guys like Led Zeppelin were just like, yeah, dude, we're going to record that in F you, and we don't care. So,
well, you know, after Muddy Blues was happening, you know, bands like the Beach Boys came in and totally knocked the blues sound out. You know, Jan and Dean and the Righteous Brothers and all this other shit, you know? And it changed what rock and roll was. To what it was at that time, where it had no blues influence. It took a couple of years for that blues influence to reach the guys from the Stones, you know?
By the time the Stones come back over here in the mid-60s, like, Muddy is, nobody cares anymore, right? A lot of this stuff is not that big anymore because you have rock and roll is here now. Cool, man. Yeah, the Stones are an important part of this. And it is cool that they cared that much. And I've said before, I could listen to Keith Richards give interviews talking about music. I could watch that and listen to it for hours and hours and hours because he clearly studies all this shit and knows a lot about music. And the fact that they came and they were like, they wanted to record at this famous Chess Records is just super cool in the story.
That is so cool, man.
So now I want to move on to some of the women of Chess Records. And the biggest female star on Chess Records was Etta James, right? And there's two songs by Etta James we can play. Let me just play the first one. Everybody knows this song.
My lonely days are over.
just so much class around that song.
So much. If you can't like fall in love with that song, like, come on, man, you have no romance in your head.
That's got like an old like doo-wop-y kind of sound to it.
It was better than the doo-wop. It was like it broke barriers. It's like she crossed over, you know.
Sure, she joined Chess in like 1960, but this stuff that she recorded with Chess, that song is like the crown of what you think. Everybody knows that song if you don't know a lot of stuff. But some of her blue stuff, it just kicks ass, man. Like, check this out. This is a song called Tell Mama. It's like a Motown song.
Yeah. It's a Chess record sound, bro.
Sure. Yeah, that song kicks ass.
Yeah, she was amazing.
She really was. And she should be put in that upper tier with like Aretha and everybody else.
I'm not gonna say she's better than Aretha, but that song is so like it should be playing in outer space somewhere.
I agree. Another song, we're talking about Aretha, the song that was the most famous Aretha song that Aretha never recorded was Rescue Me by Fontella Bass. And the guys who wrote it presented this to Leonard Chess, and Aretha Franklin wasn't on Chess Records, obviously. Fontella Bass was. So Fontella Bass recorded this, and
That's such a great song, man. It's like, what else is there to say, man? Like, rescue me. I'm lonely, you know? Right.
Yeah. Great song. The description for it on Spotify says it's regarded as the greatest record Aretha Franklin never made. But
wow.
Aretha would have crushed that, but Fontella does an awesome job, too.
Oh, it's great. I not much to say, but it's great.
I agree. That's a good, just like summertime song, like chilling in your backyard. You got people over, block party or something like that. But
or maybe even just send it to your sweetheart for a day pick me up.
The next woman I had on here was Coco Taylor. Coco Taylor was called the Queen of the Chicago Blues. And she was like a housekeeper and who would like sing at clubs at night. And then Willie Dixon saw her and wound up getting her signed to Chess Records. And she was really famous at the time, because when she would go on stage, she would like mess around with the audience and like tell stories. And she toured with Muddy and Helen Wolfe and B.B. King. But she had a song that sold a million copies called Wang Dang Doodle. And she friggin' gets after it on this. Check this out. Union Hall. We're gonna romp and tromp till midnight. We're gonna fuss and fight till daylight. Are we gonna pitch our wing and doodle all night long? All night long. All night long. All night long. All night long. Are we gonna pitch our wing and doodle all night long? I love it.
He kills it, bro.
She absolutely does. The way her voice is like, you tell your way. It's just awesome.
The first time I heard that song, the Grateful Dead cover it all the time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They don't belt it out like she does.
Yeah.
But, you know, they do have like a nice swing to it when they do it, just like that.
That's awesome. They she sounds like some of those like the early women of the blues that we've talked about. They weren't on Chess, but like Ma Rainey and yes. Bessie Smith, those huge voices.
It was a style. It was a style of singing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, that's just a cool song, something I didn't really know until I started doing the research for this. We don't need to play. I don't think I have anything by her on here, but Minnie Riperton, that does that Lovin' You song with a really high pitched voice. She was on Chess Records. Oh God,
I hate that fucking song.
Yeah, we sent that song to the electric chair. But she was like a receptionist for Chess Records and also recorded for them. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
It is interesting.
But yeah, said I didn't really care for her that much. And then I got a couple, some one-off, just some miscellaneous artists and some stuff before we wrap up. And the first one was, let me find it. It's a song that everybody knows by this.
I know phase is wrong. I'm a lonely boy. I ain't got a home. I got a voice, I love to sing. I sing like a girl, and I sing like a frog. I'm a lonely boy, I ain't got a home. Ooh, 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 ooh.
So that was on Chess Records. That song was enormous.
Oh, it's still a great song.
Clarence Frogman Henry. Yeah, it's cool because it's so different, right? That he's doing those different voices.
Yeah, for the timing, yeah. Definitely. Sure.
Another guy on the Chess roster was a guy named Dale Hawkins, and he's interesting because he was a white musician, and there weren't a whole lot of them on the Chess roster. He's really a one-hit wonder, but the one hit that he had was he wrote the song Susie Q that Creedence covered. Mm-hmm. Well, here's a little bit of that. It was 1957 that came out, so it's really old. It's a little too much cowbell on that for me.
More cowbell.
All right, all here comes all the comic book guys coming to get me. Christopher Walken's going to come and get me, but it's still interesting. Bobby Charles, he was kind of a one-hit wonder. He wrote a song that Bill Haley wound up recording. It became really popular. See You Later, Alligator. You know, probably sure. Bill Haley sing this one.
Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. When I asked her what's the matter, this is what I heard her say. See you later, alligator. After one crocodile.
I love the arrangement of that.
I just love that song, man. I never heard that before.
That's awesome. Really good. It's got like a New Orleans sound to it.
Oh yeah, I love that saying though. You know,
see you later, alligator. Song. After a while,
crack. Yeah, it's what you say to your like little nephews or something. You know.
Sure. Yeah, dude. I was interesting. I just thought that was cool that was a Chess record song. Who else was on here? Some randos. Johnny Shines. We talked about him in the blues episode. He recorded a couple things for Chess in like 1950, but they never put it out. But Johnny Shines was important because he was like Robert Johnson's like buddy. Like he toured with Robert Johnson. And you know, Robert Johnson, of course, like the founder of the blues and the guy that reportedly sold his soul to the devil to learn how to play guitar. And he's a member of the 27 Club. But I thought it was interesting that there was like a connection between Robert Johnson and Johnny Shines. And then it wasn't all just blues and rock and roll on Chess Records. They also had some doo-wop stuff. They released a ton of like gospel albums over the years. But one of the R&B groups that they had, or the doo-wop groups, was the Moonglows and their song Sincerely, which you everybody's heard this. Great.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude.
It's a good, just another sitting in the backyard with some lemonade on a summer afternoon kind of song. So
I am so looking forward to those weather days, man.
We're getting there, dude. Said it's 70.
You were down in Florida while everybody was miserable on this coast.
I got off the plane. I flew out of Trenton, New Jersey, got off the plane. It was like 12:30 at night. And the Trenton, New Jersey airport is like, there's no, like, you get off the plane and like, and you go down the steps and you walk across the runway to go into the terminal. And it was like, it was snowing. It was flurrying. And I'm in like shorts and a t-shirt and a Phillies jersey, like an asshole, freezing. But
you say,
yeah.
I'm an asshole.
Maybe before we move on, though, I need to tell the end of the story. Like, what happened to Chess Records? So the Chess Brothers, you know, blues kind of ran its course, and they sold – the Chess Brothers sold the company in 1969 to a company called GRT, which stood for General Recorded Tape. And that was more or less the end of them. Like, the Chess Brothers were still involved, but Leonard Chess died in 1972. And after that, that's really, like, that's it for them.
Did he really die like leaving the studio?
No. Okay. Yeah. So in the movie, he sold the company, right? And he gets in his car and he drives a block and he dies. No, he died a couple years later. It was like 3 years later after they sold it. So, but, when he died, that was largely the end of it. And then the company that bought Chess Records was having financial problems, and, they sold it to another company. And I guess in like the 80s, like a lot of this music wasn't around anymore. And Leonard Chess's kid, Marshall Chess, convinced the new owners to start like re-releasing all of these albums. So Chess Records wasn't like making stuff, but they were re-releasing albums. And Universal Music kind of, they own all the masters now and publish all this stuff. But in the grand scheme of things, man, it's only from like, it's 1950 to like 1969. It's like 20, it's only 20 years that this... the label was around. But again, man, just the enormous impact that this had, you know, it's like, and the Chess Records story is so close to Sun Records because they were selling the records that Sun was recording. It's just, it's so important, man, to rock and roll.
Their contribution to rock and roll was huge, man.
Sure. And just like, it's not even the contribution to rock and roll, it's just the contribution to American society, right? Like we said, Chuck Berry's tearing down these racial barriers, and these guys coming, Bo Diddley and these guys coming from like nothing in plantations of the South and teaching themselves how to, Bo Diddley building his own friggin' guitar. So cool. It's such a cool story.
They are what America is all about. Coming to this land and making your dream come true.
Sure.
The Chess Brothers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Right. And as we didn't really talk about that much, but it's like, yeah, dude, they're immigrants who came over from Europe as young kids and made it work and were a success story. Really cool, man. Really. It's a really cool story. I'm glad we got to tell it. But all right, let's move on to the back end of the show. I've got music news, man. So the first was Eric Carmen, singer and songwriter Eric Carmen, died at age 74. He had three top five hits, including that song All By Myself, which kind of sucks. And then that song Hungry Eyes from the Dirty Dancing soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. He died.
Yeah. He was the lead singer for the band The Raspberries and then wound up going solo. We're talking a little bit about Weezer in the 1994 episode. Well, if you really like their debut album, which came out 30 years ago, you can go see them play the entire album. They announced on their tour this fall with Dinosaur Jr. and the Flaming Lips, that they're going to play their debut album from front to back. So I don't like Weezer, so I won't be at that show. But I did just see that Toad the Wet Sprocket and the Gin Blossoms are touring together, so I will probably
be there. Let me get my ticket on the Ticketmaster right now.
My wife's going to have the exact same reaction when I tell her we want to go to that. She's like, what's this we?
Me and Ryan are going.
And then the last piece of music news we had, you were saying when we were setting up, man, is Neil Young announced he's bringing all of his music back to Spotify. So
who cares?
Yeah, he.
Now we can listen to Harvest Moon.
Yeah, he left in like a protest move over he didn't like Joe Rogan, and he doesn't like the way musicians are compensated off of Spotify, and he's coming back now. So all his music will be back on the platform that you can listen to at your leisure and convenience. So
I got that thing you sent me today about Madonna.
Oh my God. Oh yeah, we could talk about that real quick too. So Madonna was at a show the other day. She's on the stage, and there's a recording of her doing this, and she starts yelling at somebody in the audience for not standing. She's like, why are you sitting down? Like, I'm Madonna. You should be standing. And the person points out, like, I'm in a wheelchair. I can't stand. And it's so awkward because then Madonna's just like, I'm glad you're here. And it just moves on.
Oh, man. Like, remember Kanye West did something like that? He was all like, oh, everybody stand up to my rock and music. He's like, why are you people standing up? And they're like, everybody, like, they're in wheelchairs, you idiot.
We got a ton of second thoughts, man. So first, we got an email from Priscilla. So you mentioned one of our listeners. So she sent the show an email, said, hey, guys, I love the show. I've been listening to an episode a day. It keeps me sane while working the night shift. You guys have a great chemistry, and I learn a ton. But I got to defend myself a little bit. I'm not quite as old as you guys, and the OG Muppet movie came out before I was born. I have seen The Muppet Christmas Carol and The Muppets Take Manhattan, though, and those should definitely count. Love the new episodes. Keep rocking, Priscilla. So I wrote her back and said, you got to go check out The Great Muppet Caper. The Great Muppet Caper was great.
Let me just say, Priscilla is an amazing person. Her real name is Jackie, and it's Jackie's birthday this week.
Oh, awesome. Happy birthday.
Yeah, so let's send her out a happy birthday. She's definitely changed my life, and she loves the show.
Awesome, and, dude.
She's an awesome person. I can't wait for you to meet her, Bruce.
Right on, man. Looking forward to it.
She loves our show.
Fantastic. We also got a ton of comments on YouTube. So when we did the episode on the songs that Led Zeppelin ripped off, we published a bunch of clips on YouTube, and one of them was about Led Zeppelin ripping off Ritchie Valens' estate in Boogie with Stu. And for some reason, all these people were commenting on it this week, and we got some pretty insightful ones. So this one was from Whale's Dad. This instance and a shameful number of others where the band has claimed authorship of other people's compositions is a stain on the memory of an incredible band. Were Led Zeppelin just taking a chance at the time, or was it because they just didn't care less about anybody else? I don't know the answer, but it's distasteful that Robert Plant and Jimmy Page, two obvious scholars and lovers of the blues and early rock and roll, would have tried to get away with some musical theft that they did. Another user, RuinedHarma555, said, why didn't Little Richard sue Ritchie Valens for ripping off some Little Richard stuff in his song, Ooh My Head? And I said, I have no idea, but I'll look into it.
That's a good point.
Sure. Yeah. I responded on YouTube and I said, I don't know, but we'll read your comment on the air this week, and I will do some homework. So, and I'll see if I can find out what the deal was. And then we had a comment from Alex McIntyre who said, Zeppelin sounds so much better than all these artists he ripped off. They should all feel privileged for Zeppelin to sound so to do something with their music. And I was like, yeah, dude, that's great. Yeah. If I wrote a song, I'd be like, oh my God, Led Zeppelin's covering it, until you realize Led Zeppelin then is saying that they wrote it and they ain't paying you for it.
I'm thankful that this dude listens to us, but he's a strapper.
Yeah, he's like, you're wrong, man. Thank you for your comment, but it's, yeah. I didn't, strapper! It's not, there's your opinion and there's the right opinion. No.
Which we're professionals.
You're correct. We're professionals, so. The electric chair. Do you got something?
I was hoping you had something lame. You always have something.
I do. I've got something. So, all right, the Electric, we'll kill that Ice Spice song.
What? What is it?
That You Think You're the Shit, You're Just a Fart song I sent you like a month and a half ago.
I refuse to listen to any of these songs that you sent me. No.
Okay. Okay, well, that's awesome. So,
if it doesn't say Boat Diddley on it or something cool like that, I don't open it.
You just delete it. So, Ice Spice is a hip hop artist. She was with Taylor Swift at the Super Bowl, and she has a song called Think You the Shit Fart. And I don't believe this. I'm afraid to even look up how many times this has been played on Spotify. It's been played 49 million times. Here, let me just start playing it.
You want me to say something so bad?
Stop playing with them, Ryan.
Can you please?
Think you the shit, bitch? You not even the fart. I be going hard. I'm breaking their hearts. Like, bitches be quick, but I'm quicker. Bitches be thick, but I'm thicker. She could be rich, but I'm richer.
Damn.
Taking her man.
Dude, what the fuck is this?
Oh, I just hit the God. I turned it off before I could even hang on.
We sentence you to death.
I gotta say, it's pretty catchy though, man.
dude, it's awful. Like, here, give me.
I said 400 bands. Sending me tips. God, think you the shit, bitch. You're not even the fuck.
It's so.
I'm gonna say that shit down the bar, man. You think you're the shit? You're not even the fuck.
It's so bad, man. I don't know.
Oh my god, how do these people get record deals, man?
And I said something like weeks ago, like, oh, we heard this and I was going to put it in the electric chair. My youngest was like, you're going to put Ice Spice in the electric chair? I'm like, I have no idea who Ice Spice is, dude.
And, I thought she was one of the Spice Girls when I heard it.
Right. I was like, I don't remember her. I'm looking at her YouTube or her Wikipedia thing. She's done stuff with Taylor Swift. She's done... She covered Barbie Girl for the Barbie movie with Nicki Minaj. And I just now have read more about her than I ever need to know.
But we are here to educate and entertain.
We're stepping into the musical void to listen to this shit to bring it to everybody else. But yeah, so I think it was like the first song to ever hit on the charts that has the word fart in the title. So lucky her.
Dude, what the fuck is going on, man? What the fuck is going on?
I mean, yeah, like people have been like, get me started. We're going to sound like two grumpy old men, but yeah, this song stinks. And that it sounds like so much other hip hop music, man. Just musically, like not even the lyrics, but just like the beat and everything. It's just the same shit.
The production value is awful.
Yeah.
Like I'm listening to it on my brand new headphones and the production value is fucking awful.
Too much hip hop is just like, it's so heavy on the bass now. It just doesn't, it just sounds like shit. And I don't know, man.
It's not even the fart.
I walked right into that. So it's like stepping in dog shit. So
it's not even the fart.
Yeah. It's awful. But I mean, we said like most modern hip hop music just is not very good, man.
I just think they should just keep making Public Enemy albums and call it a day.
Get the Wu-Tang back together and all that stuff. So, you know, speaking of the Wu-Tang, man, when I was in Clearwater, one night my wife and I went into Dunedin, which is where the Toronto Blue Jays play. And we were sitting at a brewery having a beer and they had a sign on the wall that like there was an appearance by the Genius from the Wu-Tang, and you could enter a raffle because he had that song like Chess Boxing, that album, and okay. you could win a drawing to play chess against the Jizza genius from the Wu-Tang Clan. And it was an old flyer. It was like a year old. I was like, that's cool as shit. That would be awesome. That he's in his like little brewery in Dunedin, Florida. But anyway, I thought that was cool. Anyway. All right, man. So that's about it for episode 80 in the history of Chess Records. There's 80, some really,
brother, I know,
dude, we're going to, you know, we keep on pace, man. We're going to hit 100 this year. So that's pretty cool. You know, 80 is a big deal, dude, for a podcast that does once every 2 weeks. So, but we played so much great music in this episode, but we can only play 30-second clips to give our listeners a little flavor about what we're talking about. But if you want to hear the full versions of these songs, there's a link in the episode playlist down in the show notes. And while you're down there, you can go find a link to our website. It's www.prisonersofrockandroll.com. There's our email address, show@prisonersofrockandroll.com. There's links to our Facebook and our Twitter accounts, and there's a map to McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia. And if you're going to use that map for some reason to come to McCusker's, you can come down to McCusker's Tavern on May 4th, right? You're going to see your band, High Street Records, is going to be performing.
High Street Records, May the 4th. Be with you, brother. We're right going to rock it out. We do all kinds of fun music, man. I have one rule in my band. No bummer songs. All fun shit.
You guys do crush it. And and then I guess on also coming up is April 4th is what it's like WrestleMania is in Philadelphia, and the Blue Meanies hosting a little something down at the bar, right? For pre-show Meanie Mania
at McCusker's the Thursday before WrestleMania.
So it's probably going to be jumping then as well. Yeah, man. So I guess that's it. We'll circle up. We'll figure out what we're doing in 2 weeks. We'll get your mic all squared away.
Yeah, and ready to sorry rock about and roll. Sorry, I'm not sounding as rock star as I usually am. You know,
it's all good, man. You got a face for radio, so even then, it's still better.
Don't I? Really? Absolutely. It's
better than having to look at you, though. But until then,
keep on rocking.
Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.